We burn them to ashes and then burn the ashes. That's our official motto.
Anarchy Band.
Okay, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Anarchy Bang, a call-in talk show extravaganza. This is September 29th, 2019. I am your host, Aragorn, and I'm joined by Damo.
Hello.
Hello, Damo. We don't have a crowd of people here today, and this is somehow because with the changing of the seasons here in the Bay Area, which, you know, it's gone from being like 75 every day to 72. A lot of people's health has knocked them out of the game.
We ride a thin line here.
Exactly, exactly. People are very delicate.
If you want to call in, we have...
Right. So the point of this is that this is a call-in talk show conversational sort of thing. You can call us anywhere in the contiguous United States, 646-787-8464. Actually, you can call us no matter what. Just preface it with like a one.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And that's because we're number one. Okay. You can also email us at team@anarchybang.com. And that would be a great place to sort of share your more thoughtful ideas. And then also you can join us in conversation.
There's a group of people on the internet.
Yes, who are all talking about this show and other assorted hysterical things. And that's at irc.anarchyplanet.org. And so this week, the topic is basically anarchist groups. And I sort of wanted to focus this conversation on being like real rather than like a theoretical, like what's anarchist organization? Because I sort of am ambivalent on that question, but I definitely think that, well, if things go well this week, we are going to talk about the tension between sort of, anarchist individualist tendencies and other tendencies, but we're also going to talk about how it is that we do things, in practical terms and impractical terms. I have very little in the way of an editorial. I do have a couple readings that maybe we can approach as the day goes by, and maybe other readings will come up. To put it simply, anarchists who want to impact social reality have a choice. Something like Lone Wolf, Every Person for Themselves, and The Peak Alienation of the Internet Warrior, or something like a group. We as an anarchist default to calling that group a collective, but usually it's not. And the way in which that's the case, I guess, is worth talking about, but I didn't write a paragraph or two about it. And so I guess my central question for this week, and I'm obviously open to input, is how do anarchists impact social reality? And how do we do it as anarchists, which is actually maybe more interesting than just how do we do it? Because of one of my largest lamentations about the way in which like the new generation and today seems to be articulating itself is that very few people seem to be willing to call what it is that they're doing something like a group, and even fewer seem to be willing to call the groups that they form anarchist. And why is that the case? Why is it such a bummer? And why does it sort of represent the end of the relevancy of anarchist activity in general? So we welcome your call again.
646-787-8464. I beat you.
No, that's great. That's great. We each have our little, little talents.
We each have a role to play.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now I'm going to look at some other windows. See who else is paying me and why. Okay, well, that's irrelevant. I guess maybe to start out, why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience?
Oh, great. I have extremely limited experience.
Did you have any group experiences in college that were maybe anarchist or not?
Definitely. The little amount that I had were not anarchist. It was a... I'm even trying to think of what the group was. It was kind of based around a group that went to drop supplies off at Standing Rock.
Oh, you were in college during Standing Rock.
In the one semester of grad school that I did. Mm-hmm. revealing myself. Anyway, but yeah, so...
Yes. Not only do you have knowledge, you have...
More knowledge.
More knowledge. But not so much knowledge that you've been ruined.
Not enough knowledge that I was a professional at knowledge. But yeah, so then it was mainly just like small meetings, people being sad about Trump getting elected, and then I started reading more about anarchism and thought that they were lame.
You know, actually that reading probably wasn't a prerequisite to lameness.
It opened my eyes, all right, man.
Yeah. Did you actually get a chance to visit Sandy Rock?
Yes, I went one and like a quarter times. We went and dropped off supplies and spent the night, and then another time I went back just by myself. And I mainly chopped wood for 4 days, which was in itself interesting.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess.
What were your impressions?
It was interesting. Most of what I was seeing was just from the intense social media kind of quote unquote journalism that people were doing. So it was a combination of like nonprofits that were a big part of that. And then also people that were part of the more radical, quote unquote, radical Red Warrior camp kind of thing, which I think Klee knows some of the people that were in that or maybe still works with them. But so it was kind of easy to see from a distance the tensions that were going on. But when I was there, it was mostly like people were just kind of going about day-to-day stuff, making sure the camp was running. And then randomly some people who were there, not with the group, would come up to the microphone and talk about how what people were doing here wasn't what they needed to do. They needed to instead stop paying taxes or write strongly worded letters to the government or something like that.
So that was an always open mic.
Right.
So it was like all day long.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Was it a center of social reality?
No, actually it seemed like unless there was some sort of particular announcement or event going on, it was just like most people just ignored what was being said at the mic because it was just like
wing nuts.
Yeah, it was basically wing nuts. But it was right next to the kind of central fire, which usually had about six shirtless dudes chopping wood constantly. So there was
so that's why you joined that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually I was at the smaller food tent chopping my own little wood. Because I wasn't sexy enough or shirtless enough to join the big fire.
That's a fascinating. I mean, what's great about that example is it sort of it brings our conversation about general anarchist organization or groups into a discussion about the way in which activism looks today is different. Because obviously when we're talking about groups, you know, by and large what we're trying to really talk about is how do anarchists motivate themselves, organize themselves to do something, to doing things, and the things that are to be done in the modern 21st century era look like Antifa, and they look like resource defense
right
work, of which Standing Rock is obviously the high point in the and that's sort of like where a lot of the tension is. And because we went to the IAC, you know, one of the big social groups that you saw at the IAC of people who knew each other but weren't necessarily from the same place, or there were a lot of people, there was a real substrate of people there that were from Standing Rock, and they knew each other from Standing Rock. And a couple weeks ago, since the IAC, I ran into some of that social milieu of people who were sort of driving around the country looking for resources to defend, and had a perfectly pleasant conversation, and it was very, very sweet.
I mean, that is, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the idea of what anarchists want to do beyond the obvious things of like no more capitalism or no more state or something. I wonder what most anarchist groups are wanting to do outside of reacting to Trump or something like that, which, I mean, it seems like Antifa is obviously a big example of a reaction, but I don't know. What are anarchist goals?
Well, I think that the first thing, first place to start is what anarchist groups exist in North America. Mm. Like if you were going to type in your little search engine and say, you know, I would like to be an anarchist. Mm. I'd like to find out other anarchists. And you type in like anarchist activities or anarchist groups. There aren't a ton.
Mm. It'd be like Crime Think would probably be.
I'm not sure that Crime Think isn't an open group.
Mm, true.
You would find, whatever the federation, the remnants of NEFAC are,
Black Rose,
right? You'd find Black Rose because they call themselves an anarchist federation, but there's no other reason you'd find them unless you live in Rochester, New York. You would find Food Not Bombs at some point, and there you would sort of learn this isn't really an anarchist, it's not a political formation, or it's like, I guess really, you know, Black Rose, for whatever other criticism I would have of them, it's a traditional political organization. Mm. Like they clearly draw the line between like their anarchism and what it is that they do in the world.
Mm.
In other words, they answer this question that you just asked.
Mm.
Probably more coherently than almost any other group in North America.
Mm.
But they're so small. They're microscopically small and they do so little. Even if you were going to say that what they're doing is totally right on, it's, you know, it's like, I remember that at some point in the NEFAC newsletter, there was a big story about how they organized a movie theater.
Like and the workers at a movie theater, or they made a movie theater?
Meaning that three or four of them worked together at a movie theater. Three or four of them were sympathetic to the ideas of the other three or four. And with 10 people strong, they declared themselves in the federally recognized way of declaring themselves to be a union. They declared themselves a union to, you know, to organize with the owner of the movie theater or whatever. And they organized a movie theater. And you know, and it's the sort of thing where it's like, okay, well, if we want a world where it's organized, whatever that means, like they're doing the thing, they're transforming their lives.
Mm.
You know, they probably had a couple of people who didn't want to do it.
Mm.
And like, they still have to work with those people and, you know, everyone's wearing red and black all the time now. And, you know, just all of that.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if your goal is to have the person ripping your ticket to have a little red and black pin, I guess you've succeeded.
Well, or the other way to describe it would be, if you want the person who is taking your movie ticket to radically transform the entirety of the capitalist system, yes.
Then they are the seed.
Then they have done it. Well, they've done it. Like the interaction you're having with
them. So it's down to the scope of the individual.
Well, it's mostly what individuals understand.
Mm.
If you'd like to join in the conversation, our telephone number is 646-787-8464. You also can send us an email at team@anarchybang.com. So that's one way to sort of talk about anarchist groups.
Mm.
And, you know, and it's obvious why they've sort of fallen out of favor, the group formation, especially in that sort of old-fashioned union sort of mechanism. But it's not like there's something in there that is real, that is true. Or to put it more pointedly, like there have been times in history where that kind of organizing won the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure it's entirely fair to just poo-poo it, but I think it is worth talking about why is it that kind of organization or that kind of way to do politics has fallen out of favor.
Mm.
You know, I probably am, like, this is actually something that anti-state communists really get into. They talk about periodization and the way in which you can sort of understand political moments in terms of a period of time, and you can sort of track it, you know, 100, 200 years back, and you can talk about, like, whatever, when the people were strong, when the forces of repression were strong, and you know, one of the points about communization and the communization current is that it has an insurrectionary approach to this kind of question, and thinks that insurrectionary approach is the way to break the logjam of, like, more traditional, staid, conservative types of leftist politics. And so I think the question for us, we have a phone call.
That's great.
I'm not sure how much longer I could have talked about communization, but this is Anarchy Bang. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up? I saved you.
Yes,
it's Rosinante.
Hey, Rosinante, what's on your mind? Oh, I mentioned Rochester, and your ears perked up.
Yeah, a bit there. Oh, I just thought I'd give a quick call. I was thinking about two examples when I read the post there on A News, and I'll give two really quick examples of groups I've been in. And yeah, so way back in the day, for me at least, you know, early 2000s, like InfoShop time, at uni, started a group there, like teenagers, a bunch of us, and it wasn't specifically anarchist, but pretty much everybody in the group thought of themselves as anarchists.
And, it's
and so we got a...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I missed that. What's up?
I was just going to mention the fact that you were like, you had the biases of the anti-globe period in your heart.
Yeah, and pretty much the group was formed because the other groups at the campus were pretty leftist, and we wanted to do something a bit more radical. But here we are using the university's money to do that. So it was obviously open to everybody and stuff like that. But it was definitely a point within the group that people knew about. So we'd, you know, we'd have like a meeting every week, organize events, get public speakers, and design a newsletter, which was the really interesting part in my opinion there. So we'd make one like every week, mostly just like a front and back, sometimes like front and back, two pages stapled together. And we'd get together we'd design it, you know, like Thursday night, we'd go down to the union, student union, like Friday, and hang out all morning, like passing it out to professors and all the students, like listen to music, chatting, drinking coffee, and just basically meeting strangers. So it was pretty, I mean, that was like me growing up there, being introduced to anarchist ideas from other people, and also making something like that. So that was like a long time ago, but more recently, you mentioned Black Rose too, and probably like 1 year after Black Rose started, I, for fun, joined the integrating process, and
that
just
really
to check
fun.
It out. Kind of, yeah, that's what it was called. I don't know if they still call it that. So it was a huge general interest meeting, and there was probably, I don't know, like 15 or 20 people who were like, yo, I want to be part of Black Rose after this in this locale, as they say too. And I made it probably a 3 to 6 months.
I would
months.
Like to integrate process. Continue.
Yeah, it's cool. So I made it through 5 months of the 6 months process before I quit, pretty much. But I was also, you know, at that point they had caught on. And I wasn't so much welcome just because, I don't know, that's the way it is. But yeah, those are my two experiences just of two of the groups.
Well,
definitely different experiences.
Yeah, let me interrogate it a little bit because
sure.
Like the first experience sounds awesome. It sounds like exactly what anyone needs to come of age and to sort of like figure out where their position is and all the rest. What were the negative things about the first group?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because for me, I feel like, well, the group only lasted probably around 4 or 5 years. So we were really bad about recruiting new people. But like when we started, like our group was international. Like we had people from around the world, like a handful of people just all from all over. And we just never like recruitment, but like we never garnered enough interest for people or tried to do that. So after like we all basically left college, the group
that
just died. And at the end, it was just my friend and me, like, and so it was a specifically anarchist project, but we're just like printing our own like anarchist zines and distributing them. So that was one part. And also just, you know, being like the poverty of student life, like, okay, here's a semester and then you go back to wherever you're from, usually a bunch of people, kids. And so then they come back. So it's not like you live in that community and you don't know that community, because you're just there for a couple months, then you leave, then you come back, and it's just like the whole time you're trying to do this school shit, bullshit, and trying to also like have an anarchist group or a group that you're in, you know, trying to work on stuff with, which is a big struggle. I mean, there's a lot of time right there. So that's two of the big reasons why it definitely like fell apart. And
well,
also the community is like a heavily like Republican, not cool with this group kind of thing. Like we definitely took a lot of backlash from the uni and like the community, like what the fuck are we allowing this or what kind of thing. So,
well, that's interesting. Did, do you feel like you were clearly articulating different political choices you could make, and like were you growing and learning politically, or were you just copying what Crime Pink pamphlet said?
We definitely did a bit of copying.
Yeah,
we certainly did a bit of Crime Pink copying, but to be honest, it was mostly articles written by people in the group. Like,
oh, that's
we
great.
Certainly like OCR'd like some Crime Think and put it up there, but like some of the more how-to stuff, but it was mostly just like people actually writing stuff about the community, town, or like I said, international group, like people writing about where they're from and like shit going on there back at home. So yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And then the, you know, the Black Rose, of course, anyone, you know, who sort of is interested in this sort of thing would love to know more about Black Rose, but they seem to be very muted in terms of their goals for themselves. What do you think they're actually trying to accomplish at this point? Like, in other words, it seems like other than being an organization, they're not doing that much.
Yeah. To be honest, I've kind of, you know, distanced myself a lot from that after all of this.
But when you were part of it, which was the time you can really speak to?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, we've laughed about this together before, but, like, you know, it was all when I was...
I've never made fun of Black Rose.
In the process. Okay, I know that.
He has never
made fun of Black Rose, nor have I.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was... like the fight for $15 an hour, like the AFL-CIO, you know, waving flags at like a Black Rose protest kind of thing. But I would say that was their, you know, at least in this locale where I was located at the time,
sure.
Them, like their goals. I feel like across the, at least North America, and wouldn't include Montreal at that time, because I feel like Black Rose kind of gobbled up all the platformist orgs except for maybe the stuff in Montreal at that point
right.
in time. I'm not sure how
right.
it looks now, but you know, the fight for 15 and just like organizing work was a big part of it. Yeah.
Do you have any questions?
So well, I'm going to go ahead.
No, sure. That's it.
Oh, I was just going to ask, what is the, I forget what word you used, but I'm just going to say the assimilation or whatever into Black Rose. What did that process actually look like? You said you went in for 5 months.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like 3 to 6 months. I guess on the 6 month plan integrating process. I believe they called it at the time. I have a reader of all of it. I'm pretty sure it's uploaded online too. So part of it is you attend the General Assembly every month. You participate in the group, which I participated a lot. Like I organized some events and other, like, you know, write your anarchist prisoner kind of stuff. And also, let's see, GA, participate in events. Wage it, pay a due based on how much you make. And also, which was optional for if you're not a member yet, you would get your money back or you didn't have to pay. Like, I never paid. So, reading group. Yeah, you had to be part of a reading group.
And how quick was that?
The reading group was, maybe once every 2 weeks, once a week or something, if I remember correctly.
And how was it?
Yeah. It was terrible. It was really bad, in my opinion. I was definitely, you know, that's one of the reasons why I eventually ended up just stopping and being kind of not shunned from the people, but they were like, all right, you're not going to join Black Rose kind of thing.
Like, tell us more about it. Like, what was the political orientation? What was the goal? Was it like, was it nothing that was published in the 20th century was accepted?
No, they certainly had like fresh up-to-date stuff. You know, they just had things that they had written, like people in the group had written, like reading some of that stuff. Cause I mean, they're one of them big published author, but yeah, there's some older stuff too. Like, and I remember a bunch of identity politics stuff. That was a big conversation there from like the origin of identity politics. I brought the Ajota article that night, I remember, and that was highly frowned upon. That did not go over well. Let's just say that.
Wait, the Lupus Dragon?
But what's
yeah.
Fundamentally, they actually don't really disagree with it.
Right.
Like, the position. To the extent to which NEFAC was more of a class orientation, maybe Black Rose is less that way, because they very much emphasize the Spanish-speaking and the south of the border aspect. So perhaps they've changed, but in fact, NEFAC-y people don't disagree with that perspective that much. That was not your experience, Rosinante?
I would say so, yeah, for sure. And I just wanted to call in those two little examples of being part of one, not so much anarchist group, but really an anarchist group, and two, like, never made it to the group because I'm obviously not cool enough with the in crowd, but so maybe I'll call back in a little bit. Looking forward to listening to the rest of the show.
Yeah, thank you for the call.
Yeah, cool. Cheers.
This is just not necessarily related to Rosinante, but NEFAC is something that I have heard about more often, but I don't actually know what that was.
I mean, the short version is that NEFAC was, it called itself a platformist group, which I have to admit, I was also very confused about when it first came into being. There was a time starting in the late 90s where, and this definitely paralleled the anti-globalization movement, where basically a group of anarchists, and there were enough of them, mostly in the northeast of the U.S., and then bridging to Montreal, but they had a half dozen or so pretty strong chapters that lasted the whole time, and another half dozen or so chapters that bobbed in and out of reality. So it stretched all the way to Baltimore at its furthest. So Baltimore to Montreal, it was an actual federation of anarcho-communists who used the platform as their organizational principle. And it's interesting in looking back at the NESAC moment and the moment of platformism, because it basically had a whole bunch of there's a whole bunch of politics in there that people didn't really know about. So to be blunt, and I'm going to forget some of the specifics at some point. Maybe I'll crack open a Wikipedia window so that the facts are correct. But you can look up most of the stuff just in a search for NESAC. The platform was the name. There was a name of a group that was basically a whole bunch of expats from the Russian experience and from other sort of revolutionaries who were more or less internationalists. They all landed together in France and basically sat down. And so this included like Alexander Berkman at the very end of his life, Machno at the end of his life, and, you know, some other big names during the time. They sat down and they wrote a document together. That document is the platform. let's see if I can find it. Actually, this is a funny test of how the Anarchist Library is good and bad, is that, you know, we have this open source drop-in software that does the search engine stuff, and it's not great.
Right. Even if you're very exact, you still get some weird shit.
It's not about being exact. It's about understanding how this thing does its search, because it really seems to do its searches in terms of like categorical, like it searches for titles or it searches for authors, but it doesn't have any integrated knowledge in the way that Google does, where it's like, if you like, it searches for titles with exact wording, and if you don't do exact wording, then it goes into another category of searching, which is much more challenging.
Now you all know.
Yeah. Actually, the document from NESAC that talks about why they're platformists is called, it's by Nicholas Phoebus, who's a Montreal person, if I recall, and it's from the Northeast Anarchists, which was their journal. It's from 2001, and so in Quebec and more generally in North America, anarchism and organization have not been coupled well. Indeed, the last serious attempt to build a political anarchist group in North America dates back to the adventures of Love and Rage, which, of course, many members of Love and Rage bridged the gap to becoming NESAC. However, there have been, and there still are, organized anarchists around the world. And this is, of course, that term right there was like 10 years of anarchist drama. What the hell is an organized anarchist? Like they're stationary.
Yeah, they have a day planner.
Really good. Yeah. They have a day planner. Well, actually, they have a slingshot organizer, and that's why the West Coast is so fucked up. Okay, so anyways, generations of activists worked hard on the question of organization, and for those of us who don't want to reinvent the wheel, it's useful to look at their analysis and proposals. Even if we find good things in classical anarchists like Malatesta and Bakunin, we at NESAC are mainly influenced by a tradition called, for lack of a better word, platformism. So just to continue in his essay, which actually is speaking to what I was trying to get at, the Dilo Trauda group and their platform. The platformist tradition starts with the analysis of the anarchist defeat at the hands of the Bolsheviks. So that in and of itself is a sort of good start. Like if we were going to start to say, you know, start talking about anarchist activity since the WTO or since Occupy or, you know, like that makes sense. Okay, to continue. This group included Machno, Arzhinov, who was one of the historians that wrote one of the big books on the Russian moment. He was also an old friend of Machno. Ida Met, a passionate partisan and historian of the Kronstadt insurrection. Ida Met's another big figure, important. In that they were an alive anarchist. Based in Paris, the group was organized around the publication of an anarcho-communist magazine in Russian called Dilo Trouda, which means workers' cause, a project originally conceived of by Arjunov and Makhno while they were rotting in the Tsarist prison some 15 years earlier, in which they finally found in Paris in 1925. In addition to the less and less frequent letters from the comrades still in the country and the analysis of the nature of the Soviet regime, Arjunov was the first to rightly call it state capitalism, because that was really important. Dila Trudeau thought that the main cause of the failure was the absence of organizational principles and practices in the anarchist movement, which had as its source in some defects of theory, notably from a false interpretation of the principles of individuality in anarchism. The theory often confused with the absence of all responsibility. So, you know,
damn.
Yeah. So we sort of understand why people are fond of this particular. I sort of want to read a little bit of the, here's a little bit of the platform just to give you a sense as to what their concerns were. Okay, I'm not going to talk shit. Let's continue. I'm tempted to talk shit. Okay, so this is the very beginning after the introduction of the platform that we're referring to. Class struggle, its role in meeting. Like all that have preceded it, the bourgeois capitalist society of our times is not one humanity. It's divided into two very distinct camps, differentiated socially by their situation and their functions, the proletariat, in the widest sense of the word, and the bourgeoisie. Two, the necessity of violent social revolution. Three, anarchist and libertarian communism. These are obviously just section titles. Four, the negation of democracy. Democracy is one of the forms of bourgeois capitalist society. Five, the negation of the state and authority. Six, the role of the masses and the role of anarchists in the social struggle and the social revolution. Seven, the transition period. Eight, anarchism and syndicalism. And then after that, they have a section they call constructive section. The fundamental aim of the world of labor and struggle is the foundation by means of revolution of a free and equal communist society founded on the principle from each according to his ability to each according to his needs. So, obviously, the platform to our ear sounds fucking Marxist.
The negation of democracy part was kind of cool, though.
Yeah, why is that?
Oh, I just feel like most people who are engaging in some sort of organizing won't necessarily say that they are actively anti-democracy, or at least make that super well-known, but...
Yeah, I think that prior to the 20th century, the 20th century, I think, is really when the hypnotism of democracy came in. You know, especially like when you think about after World War II, the fact that our military argued that it was trying to improve or upsell democracy in most of its actions after World War II, which, you know, just seems so insane. But you have to go through the fact that, like, you know, think about your own education.
Mm-hmm.
I did not hear an inkling that democracy was a problem until way after schooling.
And even the like most subversive thing that I had read and like been assigned in school was Howard Zinn, and it's not like he's anti-democracy.
No, he's not anti-democracy. I mean, I'll actually read that section because it's really short. The negation of democracy. Democracy is one of the forms of bourgeois capitalist society. That's just the title. Here we go. The basis of democracy is the maintenance of the two antagonistic classes of modern society, the working class and the capitalist class, and their collaboration on the basis of private capitalist property. The expression of this collaboration is parliament and the national representative government. Formally, democracy proclaims freedom of speech, of the press, of association, and the equality of all before law. In reality, all these liberties are of a very relative character. They are tolerated only as long as they do not contest the interests of the dominant class, i.e. the bourgeoisie. Democracy preserves intact the principle of private capitalist property, Thus, it, democracy, gives the bourgeoisie the right to control the whole economy of the country, the entire press, education, science, art, which in fact make the bourgeoisie absolute master of the whole country. Having a monopoly in the sphere of economic life, the bourgeoisie can also establish unlimited power in the political sphere. In effect, parliament and representative government in the democracies are but the executive organs of the bourgeoisie. It's very nice to say. Consequently, democracy is but one of the aspects of bourgeois dictatorship, veiled behind deceptive formula of political liberties and fictitious democratic guarantees. It's nice, very short. It sort of makes the point, but the implications of it are so complex, so there's so much to it that isn't said there. And that sort of has been what modern theory has been doing since 68, really. I mean, like this idea that, like, when we talk about the sophistication of capitalism, what we're really talking about is a critique of democracy. And that stuff's all fairly new.
And I mean, it seems like it's usually in split between something called representation and something called, I guess, private property. It seems like those things are usually split up as the problems of democracy. But I mean, anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. So I guess in opposition to the platform or platformism is something that looks like affinity groups. Is that what people would usually argue?
Well, that was the argument at the time. Like if you were to go to infoshop.org and look at their forums at that time, this would be the kind of thing that they would be arguing about. But the real problem with all this stuff is, like, for lack of better language, and I'm just going to speak in total generalizations, the Quebec part of MEFAC were politically sophisticated in the sort of European tradition and could have these arguments and did, and very much like had a level of politics that talked on this level. Americans are not politically sophisticated. And so, while, you know, with some very specific exceptions, of course, that was that's not true, but by and large, American politics oftentimes looks like clique politics. And so MEFAC as an entity had basically like a political coherent group that were sort of like conservative anarchist politics. And then it had the American wing that sort of like wanted to do stuff and had to like prove that they were doing stuff to sort of vindicate their position, but were not necessarily that coherent or sophisticated, except for a few people. And and that's all worth mentioning just because it meant that a lot of the fights that people were having against MEFAC were sort of arguing apples and oranges. Like, what I read was the platform, well, first of all, that's a very coherent and sophisticated position, even if it's totally bullshit, which mostly it is, not in my opinion. But like, if you argue that that's your orientation and you're arguing with most of North American anarchists, you're not, like, no, North American anarchists are not arguing about how to defeat bourgeois society. Like, they're talking about how to protest an Apple store. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like there really wasn't apples and oranges sort of thing going on. And then there's also the way in which the internet was just coming into existence at this point. InfoShop really is where a lot of these sort of fights were happening. And a lot of the fights in InfoShop were with people who were like, I want to do something. I want to start a Food Not Bombs chapter in my town. Like that's a different level of political sophistication than what MEFAC was working with. And so the only real place where MEFAC had that level of argumentation were with like pretty hardcore egoist type people, i.e. Anarchy Magazine. And it was a stupid argument on some level because the positions were so different.
Right. What's the point of fighting if you can never win?
you're never going to find a place where let's do something together.
Right.
And of course, you know, the other big thing about U.S., American, Canadian politics is how fucking enormous our countries are. Like in France, you could hypothetically bicycle from one end of the country to the other, right? It's the size of California, maybe. And that's just a different orientation when you think about the difference between San Francisco and Boston. I mean, we're very far apart from each other. It's very hard to both, like the only information feedback, and you know, that I'm sort of getting is from the chat room, and sort of like, how do you hold a conversation at the same time that your eyes are looking at the IRC channel? It's very challenging. But you know, my goal here, and the goal here in general, is not to just to talk about NEFAC, right? It's to talk about like who is doing anything, and what does that look like? Like, how do we have a sophisticated anarchist politic? And it feels like we're not having it anymore. It feels like it's not going so well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is actually interesting or not, but it seems like something that looks like a coherent conversation or organization previously seems to be really centered around, just from what I was reading, like newsletters almost, or just like some kind of very specific piece of published information that's then backed up by something like face-to-face conversations. And so I wonder if it's not just a logistical thing, but just a less of that is happening now.
Well, this is actually a place where we, like, I don't want to be overly prescriptive because I both don't know what the future holds and sort of like don't, like, some things I have strong opinions about, other things I sort of just want to examine rigorously at, maybe like I want to try it on for size and then be willing to take it off. What you're really talking about when you're talking about this, and I'll talk about it at detail because I find it quite interesting myself, is how has technology changed the way in which anarchists organize, for lack of a better word, like the composition of anarchist groups. And like, it seems like the internet could be a fantastic thing, and yet it isn't. And that disconnect to me feels very important, right? Because I'm not technology neutral. I'm hostile towards, I'm not exactly hostile towards every aspect of it. So this idea that we could have a forum where we could communicate, that sounds like a great thing. It only stopped being a great thing when we stopped communicating to each other in good faith. And what does that mean? Because like, good faith exists and doesn't exist in equal measure. But now we experience the internet as a place where there's no good faith anywhere. And that's interesting to me. Like, one of the reasons why the podcast has sort of come up as a format is because my good faith or bad faith is being communicated to you very clearly by microphone right now, as opposed to Facebook or any of the meme platforms where like my good faith or bad faith is no idea. And I might abandon that identity tomorrow and have good faith or bad faith with the next identity that I come up with.
Yeah. I mean, not to be overly materialist about it, but it seems like the barrier to communicate or interact on the internet being lowered so far, especially with something like mobile apps and things like that, is possibly one reason that it's so often in bad faith.
Yeah.
Because there is actually no physical barrier or, you know, technological barrier to it. I don't know if that actually matters that much, but I'm trying to think. So something that you might see as like a positive aspect of the internet was maybe something like the anti-politics
board,
maybe, or
some... we'll talk about that in a second. Okay. So first, let me talk to you about the disco bowl. The disco bowl is actually what you're referring to when you refer to the newsletters that were shared back and forth. So the disco bowl couldn't exist without Xerox technology, which, remember, that's only 40 years old. Like, in other words, if the internet's 20 years old, Xerox was only 40 years old. So the disco bowl, discussion bulletin, was basically me typing a letter to my comrades, and the letter being stapled to the letter that you write, to the letter that other people write, that is then collected from like a city like Boston and San Francisco, and then photocopied and mailed to all the other locations.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's 12 active Love and Rage chapters, that's how many Disco Bowls got sent out. My first political moment, like where I understood that anarchist politics was more sophisticated than just having an opinion, was in 1992. I was in San Diego, and the conference for Love and Rage was in San Diego.
Mm.
And at that conference, Love and Rage had a split. Love and Rage split between a federation and essentially a network that no longer called itself Love and Rage. Before that meeting, it was just a network.
Mm.
So partially what the difference was the network was how the paper was put together. It was how everything was logically put together. When the Federation happened, it was a political move by people who then later became Maoists.
Mm.
But by and large, that moment when that happened, I watched it happen. I saw it happen. And it was like, whatever, it was like a real lesson in politics. But before that, when I sort of like tried to understand the history more of Love and Rage, how I did it was by reading those Disco Bowls. And they were amazing. Because of course, but when you write a letter, you write, you know, 500 to 1,000 words of prose.
Mm.
You know, your feelings come in. It feels like it's absolutely a good faith behavior activity. And, you know, it might have some funny shit in it, but it is what it is. And and of course it's slow, right? Like a Disco Bowl would come out a couple times a year.
And I mean, I don't imagine that Xeroxing was super inexpensive unless you were finding different ways to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure it was mostly scam.
Still. Anyway.
But mostly it was fascinating because the tone of it was just so wild compared to, like, I'm actually interested to see if they've copied and pasted it, like if they've OCR'd it or whatever, if you can find it online, just because the tone of it was just so different, so unusual. Because ultimately, right, like, I don't agree with any of the politics of the different Love and Rage factions or in the strategy of what it was that they were trying to do with their time, but I loved it at the time. Like, I was so enraptured by it all. Anyways, but it really speaks to how the technology of how communication happened influenced the tone of it, the politics of it, a great deal.
Mm.
And yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at that point, part of the question is, who are you communicating with and why? And I don't know necessarily what the motivation of most people communicating on the internet is anymore, other than maybe being funny. I don't.
Yeah, it does seem like, I mean, it's when you're a fish, how much do you pay attention to the air you breathe, you know?
Mixed metaphor, but okay.
Yeah. But the point being that the Disco Bowl had this very attenuated communication mechanism or whatever, whereas the internet nowadays feels like, hello.
Shut up.
Yeah, right. You know, I in fact was part of a group that did try to intervene in a lot of this stuff. I mean, I guess the intervention was more directly in the context of this pamphlet that I just saw people were talking about how important it was. Again, the text is called Call or Appel. Yeah. So our response was called Hello, but as an example of how it is that sort of like the medium is the message, I think Hello continues to be a great response. And it's sort of weird to me that so many people who are of the like intellectual anarchist sort seem to have, well, I mean, I guess one of my criticisms is there's something about how the internet has integrates with politics nowadays that makes people customers of texts rather than participants or engagements with, and that people seem to associate themselves much more with, like, I am a person who believes these set of texts.
Right.
I recently had someone inform me that while they still like me personally, they have they no longer read my texts or the texts of my people, but and now read the texts of another person. And it was just this very, like, yeah, just this moment where you're like,
yeah. I have been on Twitter for the last few months, and it seems like very clear with particularly like post-structuralist authors that you become a member of a weird philosophical brand instead of how do you use ideas.
A person that thinks.
Yeah, you're a person that thinks, and what can I take from this philosophy? You're instead like, didn't you understand that Deleuze is trans or something? Like, and he's awesome? I don't know. It's very strange, but.
That is the world we live in.
Did you want to talk about Hello or?
No. I don't have anything specific to say about it right now.
I guess the question is, do we want to wrap it up at an hour, or do we want to keep?
Yeah, why don't we wrap it up at an hour? Give ourselves a break.
You fucking people. Yeah. okay. Any last thoughts on what would your dream team at anarchist organization be?
Well, I mean, we barely even touched on that topic. I don't necessarily want to go big without much interaction. But I will say that I would love to live in a world where there were anarchist federations that were big and healthy and strong and where there was more of everything.
Right.
Like, in other words, I wish people didn't have jobs and could instead, you know, stay home and fight with each other about anarchist organizations. and I feel very sad, more or less because I feel like anarchism in the past decade has basically been defeated by people having day jobs.
Rent.
Yeah, rent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that has been my experience of moving to the Bay. I mean, there's still obviously people living cheaply and things like that in very attenuated ways, but the thought that everyone would have, like, everyone in your friend circle would have either like very part-time or part-time jobs and a lot more free time to actually like face-to-face discuss is something that seems wild to me.
Yeah. That's what the 90s was like.
Damn.
I mean, it's interesting. There were two sort of waves of gentrification that happened in the Bay, and the first one wiped out the capacity for everyone to have part-time jobs, and the second one wiped out anyone having part-time jobs. And like basically by the end of the 90s, that became an impossibility in San Francisco.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like there are still pockets of places where that is possible.
Oh
yeah, I mean, in the U.S.
They're not,
I mean, they're
cool.
Yeah, I was gonna say they are very small, which I mean, maybe that's good, but I don't know them.
I'm not sure how it's good. Maybe that's true. Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us for this week's Anarchy Bang. We've said before that we're going to cut it off after an hour because sometimes it doesn't feel cool to just stare at each other and try to have an engaged and interesting conversation. So
y'all can suck it.
So, see you next week. We'll upload this just like usual. Have a great week.